Welcome in on a Friday edition of the Bill Michaels Show. We are glad you're with us today. Beautiful sun out today, a little bit cooler, but good to be here. You want to join us as we are now fully on board of all of our network radio stations all throughout the great state of Wisconsin, also on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram. We're live today. We're on Twitch TV, Kick TV, LinkedIn TV, and our text line is up and running, 608-321-1670, 608-321-1670. And if you want to get a hold of us on the line, 877-867-1670, email the program, thebillmichaels@gmail.com, thebillmichaels@gmail.com, and you're good to go. So we were talking in the last hour, pretty much solely in the last hour. We kind of went through the weekend. You got the Brewers heading off to St. Louis, the Bucks coming up on Sunday evening, taking on the Indiana Pacers, and hopefully the Bucks can get a win. We're going to be joined a little bit later on today in the program. Coming up, we're going to take a look down in Indianapolis, as a matter of fact, and we are going to have Merrill Hodge is going to join us a little bit later, talk some NFL draft, but also down in Indianapolis, Pat Boylan from Bally Sports Indiana is going to be here, and we'll talk with him about the Pacers and their matchup with the Bucks coming up and life without Giannis and such. So we'll get into all of that, but we were talking about the NIL, the portal. And then I got this one from Donald. He says, you tell me how fair this is. The rookie contract for Victor Wembanyama, 4 years, $55 million. His first 2 years, $12.160 million. And then he's got an option for $13.5 million and almost $17 million in his fourth year. 4 years, $55 million. Caitlin Clark, 4 years, $338,000. He said, you tell me if that's fair. First of all, I remember the argument being about what women's sports makes. And what I always ask is, don't look at the size of an individual contract. What are the players being paid percentage-wise for what the league is bringing in? Does that make sense? So I remember when there was a claim, Megan Rapinoe was complaining about one of many things, but she was talking about how it's so blatantly unfair and how it doesn't come close, it doesn't compare. So the comparison was made and said, look, the men make about 30% of the overall revenue in men's soccer, 30% out of 100. The women make 54% out of 100. So if you want to make the same percentage as men, go back to the 30%. Well, wait a minute. Didn't want to do that. I don't know what the WNBA brings in. I don't know. Couldn't tell you. I've never looked at their overall revenue sheets. But if say it's the men's side with their contracts, what's being paid by ESPN and TNT and, you know, CBS or Fox or whoever's carrying the games, okay? I think it's just ESPN, basically, ESPN and Disney and ABC and such. But if you want to look at all of that and what they're getting locally on their deals and put all that together and say, okay, what is the totality of that? And then compare that to what the women are making in totality. And then tell me what the percentages are. That's the only way you can base it. Don't base it on individual contracts. Because if you've got a contract, say you're the NFL and you've got a women's league and a men's league, and the men's league for total revenue per team salary cap is $350 million, and the women's team is only, you know, $100 million or $50 million, and the players are proportionate to what the money is, even though they're not making the same amount of contracts, I don't know what to tell you. You can't say that Caitlin Clark should come in and make 4 years, $55 million in a league that couldn't support that. Because you would bankrupt the league. If you had a few players like that that came in, demanded that amount of money, you'd bankrupt the league. The league couldn't sustain itself. So I don't know what your point is. You know, there probably are some of you that would rather watch women's sports than men's sports. That's fine. but the overall majority of viewing audiences, and the numbers would tell you this, even though this year's women's tournament was pretty big, the overall overwhelming number of people watching professional sports are watching the men. The only one that I can think would be vastly different maybe would be women's tennis, because I think women's tennis really had a an ascension for so many years. But I don't know what to tell you. So I get what you're saying, and it's a damn shame, I guess, with the popularity of Caitlin Clark, but she's going to have to go out and do a whole lot of marketing deals, you know?
Well, and her deal with Nike is reportedly eight figures, so it's
right.
It's at least $10 million a year, and it's
right.
Got a signature shoe, so she's not going broke, everyone.
Right.
She's making good money. It's not
right.
Equivalent to the NBA, but the NBA, as you said, Bill, it's about how big is your piece of the pie, right? Not necessarily, you know, how big your contract is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So and nobody pays a day. I shouldn't say nobody. That's very derogatory. But on the daily, I really don't pay attention to the WNBA. I just don't. Every now and then I'll catch a game, like if it's on in a bar or something like that. It's not sit-down destinational viewing for me. And a lot of that, either on the radio or on TV, is where the contracts lie. I don't know what to tell you. I watch so many other games and so many other things. It's just not one of those things that I pay a lot of attention to. So I if you're trying to create some kind of a schism of fairness and pounding your fist that the women aren't, you know, as important or getting paid the same as the men, look at the percentage of the overall revenue of the league, compare that to the salaries. And then what are the participants in the WNBA getting a percentage to the overall income of the league? And then compare that to the same over on the men's side, and then talk to me about fairness. Because you can only take what's there. You can't take what isn't there. 877-867-1670, 877-867-1670. If you want to find us, please feel free to go ahead and do so. I do want to get some phone calls. We got some people on hold, and they've been waiting a while. So let's go to Lenny listening to us in Greenwood. Lenny, welcome to the program, man. What's going on?
Oh, good. It's going good. Hey, I got two comments. One, it's with the mess it's made in the NCAA, and now they want to pay our high school students. I think it's a very bad idea.
Mm-hmm. They already allow it in over 30 states in the U.S., so, I mean, it's something that's coming. It's just a matter of when.
I think it's a mistake. I mean, look what's happening in the NCAA with it.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree.
Know, kids can be able to transfer to different schools also. I know now you can transfer different school districts if you want, if you sign up a year before. But anyways, the second thing is, last week or so you were talking about the best coaches in the NFL, and I didn't hear you mention Dan Campbell, and you better watch out. He's going to come and bite your kneecaps off.
Lenny, appreciate the phone call. Well, if I'm talking about schematically, I don't know. We labeled like five or six different coaches. We talked about Shanahan, McVay, Tomlin's continued success of years over 500. And you're talking about coaches that are in the league right now. I mean, you know, you start to think about that. And I didn't really mention Dan Campbell in the top five, I think. Who else do we list in there? McDaniels has certainly kind of taken the league by storm. Who else was in that mix?
I think McVay,
Reed,
Shanahan,
Andy Reed.
And those are all built. Those are all guys that have an offensive scheme by themselves. They roll
right.
into your program, into your organization, and they bring the offense with them. I think the hesitation with Dan Campbell is, you know, what happens if he loses Ben Johnson? What happens when
right.
he has some of his scheme guys get poached? I think that's our only hesitance with
yeah.
Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell would certainly be in the mix. He just would. But I don't think I'd put him top five. I just don't. I think I would probably put him in that next tier. What he's done since he took over as the head coach in Detroit is unbelievable. And there's something to be said. There's something to be said for the motivation of professional athletes and what he's been able to accomplish and the way he's rolled the dice. I mean, he's kind of, you know, if you want to call him, he's the gunslinger of coaches, you know? He's the gunslinging gambler of coaches, and it's paid off for him. Nick Sirianni, a couple of years ago, paid off for him too, you know? So but as far as schematics go, I think we tend to give it to the offensive side more often than not. Andy Reid, Shanahan, McVay, those guys. I'm trying to think who else I would put into that mix, you know? But I get it.
I think Kevin O'Connell's really good scheme-wise,
too. Kevin O'Connell, yeah.
I'm interested to see what he does with another quarterback now, but I think he's pretty good.
I think I'd probably put him on that little bit of an outside, but yeah, I could see that. So there's some really good minds right now. Camaro says, what about Zach Taylor and what he's done with Joe Burrow? No, I don't think so. I think Zach Taylor did a really good job last year with Jake Browning as the backup and what they were able to do and keep over 500. But I think there have been times, and watching Zach Taylor make decisions at times, and I don't pay attention to Cincinnati football as maybe as close as some of you do, but there were times that I kind of questioned his decision-making, which is the same reason I think I don't put Mike McCarthy at the top. McCarthy's had a ton of success. You look at the wins and losses in the league, McCarthy's had a ton of success. But there are times where he'll make mistakes. Crucial mistakes, clock management mistakes, and that lowers them. And Zach Taylor is kind of one of those guys. Sometimes I think they've actually won in spite of. So no, I wouldn't put Zach Taylor in that same list. Let's go to Blaine, listening to us in Augusta. Blaine, how you doing today, man? What's going on?
Doing well.
What are you thinking?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got two comments about WNBA. First of all, it's owned by the NBA and subsidized and loses money.
Mm-hmm.
So salaries can't compete or even be compared to a league that's making tons of money on the men's side.
Right.
So I think your point about 30%, the percentages, is a fair one. I also think that Caitlin Clark there's an opportunity here for the league, kind of a, not to the same level, but a Tiger Woods situation where if she – you know, her popularity carries over to the league and everything explodes, well, then everybody should start making money over on that side if the league starts to make money.
Correct.
So those are my thoughts.
No, you're 100% right. I appreciate the phone call. When you think about this now, look at the ratings. The ratings were huge for the women's, the Final Four, and for that matchup with LSU and obviously for the championship game. The ratings were unbelievable for the women's side, no doubt. They succeeded. And maybe now here's the caveat to that. Huge year, huge ratings. The women were pounding their chest saying, look, we're there. We've arrived. Let's see what they are next year. Let's see if they remain the same. Because are we paying attention to Caitlin Clark or are we paying attention to women's basketball and the competition? It didn't hurt that you had Malky getting – in with the whole Washington Post thing and bringing that to light. It didn't hurt that you had the rivalry between her and Reese. It didn't hurt that Caitlin Clark had the record and that they were trying to redeem themselves from last year's loss. You know, it didn't hurt. All of that stuff was great storylines playing into all of this. And then you had an undefeated NC State team. Undefeated. Was it NC State or South Carolina? South Carolina. Undefeated, going for a perfect season. It hadn't been done since Gino Auriemma did it a while ago. So you had a lot of different really good storylines. See if it happens again next year. If it does and it's here to stay, then absolutely you start talking about more money, more popularity, more bigger NIL deals. All of that goes into it. But if it goes right back to where it was and the WNBA ratings – it's great to say that the Indiana Fever season tickets sold out, and the minute the games were announced, the tickets were zapped up and everybody's, you know, wanting to come and see Caitlin Clark, that's great. But see if it lasts. You know, does it burn like a white-hot comet? Or does it burn slow and steady and continue to ascend? Because the comet burns out eventually. But does this, in the eyes that are now on it, stay? That's the big thing. Do they stay? Does the casual fan stay? Or do they just go back to what it is they were doing before? 877-867-1670, 877-867-1670. If you want to hit us up, please feel free. Go ahead and do so. 877-867-1670. Got a lot more of the Bill Michaels Show coming up right after this.
This is the Bill Michaels Show on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Friends of Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Pella's got some deals going on, and man, I got a text yesterday from Gina Della herself, and she said, hey, big news, just announced 0%, 60 months, or no payments, no interest, and no down payment for 24 months. So you get to pick either or, 0% for 60 months or no payments, no interest, and no money down for 24 months. But the contract, when you get them, you know, kind of brought into your home, got to be signed by May 10th. So what does that mean? What are you thinking about? If you're thinking about doors or windows right now, this is what you do. You call for the free in-home consultation. And you say, okay, what do I need? Do I need all my windows? Do I need a few windows? Need a door? Patio door, whatever. And then you sign the deal. Okay? And you get to choose 0% for 60 months or no payments, no interest, no money down for 24 months. Pick one or the other. There you go. That's a hell of a deal. And you can do it right now. They have locations up in the Wausau Stevens Point area. They have one in Green Bay, have one in the Milwaukee Brookfield area. And also they have a location in Madison. So you can't go wrong. Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, great people, great place, and you can tell them we sent you. But go to PellaWI.com, PellaWI.com, or call them 855-PellaWI. That's 855-PellaWI for curb appeal, economical factor, curb appeal, or if you just want to do the different innovations that they have, roll screens, slider windows, different hardware, interior, exterior. I can go on and on and on. Great, or just the security of putting your head on your pillow at night knowing nobody's getting into your house because these things are safe and secure. That's the best way to go. Our friends at the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, call them 855-PELLA-WI, 855-PELLA-WI, or go to PellaWI.com, and you get to choose either 0% for 60 months or no payments, no interest, no money down for 24 months. Good stuff from our friends at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. There you have it. Judge Mail's burner account says, hey, by the way, the Big Ten, the SEC, they're going to create a super association that will regulate NIL and make the NCAA obsolete. Somebody should, right? Somebody should. The NCAA, you know what I equate the NCAA to right now is the PGA. They don't know what they're doing. They don't have the money to battle, or they've got all the money and they don't want to give it up. They have some of their loyal followers, but there are people breaking away on the daily almost. And now they're throwing their hands in the air going, well, what do we do? And they don't really know which direction to go. That's the NCAA. All the NCAA cares about is they're getting a pile of cash. And the problem is that if the NCAA doesn't do something, if they don't do something, he's absolutely right. The Big Ten, the SEC, they'll gobble up a few more teams. They'll put these 35, 40 teams against one another. They'll be the top teams in the country. They'll put all these teams against one another, and that'll be what everybody pays attention to for the most part. And they'll create their own super group and literally make the NCAA obsolete. And the NCAA will not get that money. They'll take it for themselves. They'll just secede. They'll leave the union. and say, you're not taking our money. You're not going to dole it out to everybody else when we're the ones making the money. And it's all because of their own greed. It's just, it's become a really, for lack of a better term, just kind of a dirty, smarmy business. And you feel bad because, you know, and I don't know the age range that we're speaking to at this point. But, I mean, Grant, how old are you?
26.
26, okay. So you go 20. I don't know what your earliest memories are of college football, college athletics, but you go back even 20 years. What a drastic difference. Huge, drastic difference of 20 years ago when you still had the rivalries in place and you were just talking about, you know, maybe the possibility of some of these divisions, these conferences expanding again and, you know, but 20 years is like a lifetime ago in the world of college athletics, right? I mean, you can remember the rivalries. Yeah. You can remember the Big Ten against the SEC and the ACC and players were there for 4 years and all of that's changed. I mean, you even have memories of the history and the tradition of college athletics, right?
Yeah, it's definitely changed a lot. Yeah, lots of different versions of college sports throughout my life. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, and now it's, you don't even know the faces on the daily. You know, because you're not even sure who's coming in and who's going out anymore. It's the Wild West. I go back to the days of, you know, when you went to a college, you were there 4 years. And if you wanted to transfer, you had to sit out a year and wait to come back. You know, coaches, if they got bought out of a contract or something happened, then that school paid the other school for that guy's services. They bought him out. You know, nothing's really changed. It's just that boosters got more and more money and coaches were making more and more money. And so, it wasn't this. Getting an education, it mattered to your parents. Were you getting an education? Were you going there to get your degree? And if you weren't getting your degree and you were going to have success in sports, well, that was okay because you'd come back and get your degree. You know, I go back to when there were just 10 teams in the Big Ten, for God's sakes. You know?
Ancient history.
Yeah. Right? I mean, and now it's just, it's wide open and rivalries and even territories. You know, the Big Ten was the Midwest. That was it. Now it's coast to coast. It's all about the TV markets. It's all about gobbling it up and the more money you can make. And look, I understand it. It's great for competition. It's great for us, for viewers. It's great for us because we love to see the competition that is. And new rivalries will be formed and all yada, yada, yada. But along the way, it's kind of lost something. It lost a little bit of that, what I would consider tradition. I remember, you know, when you woke up on New Year's Day, what mattered was the slew of games, the Rose Parade, and then ultimately the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. That was one of the big marquee games. You know, I remember that tradition. And don't get me wrong, I get it. We've moved on. We've now gotten down to where we have a true champion in many different facets. And you want to expound upon that. And I understand. Let the game be won on the field, not judged by voters. 100%. But we've lost a lot of tradition due to money.
And I think a lot of my lifetime watching both Badger football and basketball, the idea was, well, Wisconsin doesn't have as much money and they're geographically isolated and they're disadvantaged compared to like Ohio State. But the point of cheering for a team like Wisconsin or Iowa or Illinois is they had to identify players that fit their culture and fit what they were doing. Right. All these schools, they had their own thing going and they had to find players where the fit would be good. Right. That's how you would win. And now it's just so random year to year. Right. I think we've lost a little bit of that.
Yep. From the 920, there should be stipulations on the NIL deals. I would say I want to guarantee you stay at your school or it's not a deal. I would love to see that. Love to see that. The Kelly in the 608 says Wisconsin's becoming a have not a one of the haves. Says, I got that one already. The next one, let's see here. Oh, by the way, from the 608 also, good morning and happy Friday. There you go. Nice wave. Thank you very much. This one is from the 608 that also says, hey, Bill, there's a Pella in La Crosse. Is that affiliated with the Pella down by you? Also, I'm headed to Milwaukee this weekend with the wife and kids to visit friends. Where would you recommend for a good burger? Lastly, a sports question. Who is your ideal first pick for the Packers in the first round? Oh, whole bunch of stuff. For a good burger. Wow. Let me... gosh, there's so many good places. Burgers are burgers. Sobelman's has a terrific burger that everybody knows about. I mean, it's you can buy the big ones that are huge, that are bigger than your head. Big, thick burgers, juicy, all that kind of stuff. I love Stenny's. They have really good burgers, believe it or not. I talk about their wings all the time, but they have really, really good burgers. I love the mushroom and Swiss burger down there. And the cool thing that they have that a lot of people don't is they do a jalapeno grilled cheese. It's almost like a smash panini almost that's a grilled cheese, but it's really, really good. So they've got that there. The Tiger Burger at Social House I think is awesome. But just across the board, there's a lot of good places with a lot of good burgers. But those are three that I could definitely recommend. I mean, you can go to Stoli's has good burgers as well. Steel Tank Brewing, but that's in Oconomowoc. It's not downtown Milwaukee. And as far as my ideal first pick, my ideal first pick for the Packers, I think, after doing a lot of reading, I would be Cooper DeJean. Is it DeJean or DeZine? I get people tell me all the time, you're saying it wrong. And then I'll say it the other way, and then I'll get 20 people that'll say, no, you're saying it wrong.
I think it's DeJean, but I've never heard him say it. I hear most people right. Say DeJean. So I think it's DeJean.
Okay, Cooper DeJean. That's because it fills three positions. He's versatile. He's more of a corner, but he can play safety, and he's a punt returner. It fills three positions. There's a lot of versatility there, and the Packers love that. And then you start to look at the analytics, the speed, the size, and you think, okay, if you get him, now think about this. Let's just say, for S's and giggles, Stokes comes back. Think about that. Stokes comes back, and Stokes is back to what he was his rookie season. Okay, now this is very wishful thinking, right? Stokes and Jair at your corner. DeJean, Xavier McKinney at your safety. You got Keyshawn Nixon playing the nickel. That's not a bad secondary right there. I don't care who you are. That's not a bad way to go. So he would fortify that spot almost immediately. And then I would either go linebacker or offensive line, offensive tackle after that, and then begin to fortify your depth, running back, wide receiver, defensive line, even additional in your secondary. But if I had to say my ideal first pick, him or Guyton? Guyton is the offensive tackle. Guyton is an 6'8", 322. I think he's more like 325, 330. But good feet, very teachable, doesn't have to start right away, but you know he's eventually going to take over that tackle position. Yeah, that's an anchor. And then you've got the ability to move some guys around. If you want Zach Tom to put pressure on Josh Myers, then you've got road graders up front on your offensive line. Then you've got that makes Josh Jacobs that much better. So either or, you can't go wrong. There you go. 877-867-1670. Coming up next, we're going to talk NFL draft. Merrill Hodge is going to be joining us. Cannot wait. You're going to want to hear what he has to say, because if he's got the same opinion he had when we were out at Super Bowl, it's pretty solid. Merrill Hodge next.
Covering Wisconsin sports like a blanket, this is the Bill Michael Show on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Good to have you back, Bill Michael Show, on this Friday edition. Bucks basketball coming up this weekend down at the Fiserv Forum, taking on the Pacers. Brewers are in St. Louis. And the Packers continue to prepare themselves for the NFL draft less than a week away. We're going to bring you full first-round coverage coming up next Thursday night. Make sure you tune in starting at 6 o'clock Central Time. We'll bring you pick-by-pick action of the NFL draft. And joining us now over on the hotline, had a great conversation with him out when we were out in Vegas during Super Bowl. Merrill Hodge now joining us from formerly the Steelers running back, ESPN, NFL Network, an inspirational speaker. Merrill, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Bill. How you doing, brother?
We're doing great. We're doing great. So let me ask you this, though. How did Vegas treat you? You have a good time?
I did. I always have a great time in Vegas. Here's how I look at Vegas. It's got great. If you're just down the strip, you probably think different of Vegas. But you get outside the strip, there's great golf courses. And as you know, Vegas may be better than New York as far as getting good food, a nice show, and be out of the city in a heartbeat. You can't do that in New York. You get stuck in a city.
I agree.
I had a really good time.
Good. You and I were talking about the quarterbacks coming into this, and there's a lot of speculation about Caleb Williams and McDaniels and Drake May, and you go on through the list. And I wanted to get your opinion because it seems to be that it's a lock that the Bears are going to take, Caleb Williams at the top, and we understand that. Are they making the right move?
Yeah, well, listen, obviously only time will tell that. Here's what I think is always a mistake. That you realize that teams win championships. Okay, that no one quarterback has won every Super Bowl. No quarterback's going to win. Are they important? Is it a critical component? There is no doubt. I understand that. I played in the league a long time, so I understand the significance and importance. But I also know that teams win championships, And I guess when I'm looking at a team, they put themselves in a position getting rid of Justin Fields that – you almost now have to go get somebody. You might as well go get somebody because you have nobody, worth experience. And what they did to Justin Fields is probably one of the worst things you can do to any player. And what I mean by that is every year he had a different coordinator. He had different learning. He had a different system. And there's no way – I don't care what your profession is. If you keep starting over and over and you change things every single year, I don't care what your skill set is, you can never get good. You can never get better. You can never evolve. You can never develop. And, that was unfortunate for him. Now, I actually believe he's in a really awesome spot in Pittsburgh for that development, if they can hold on to those 2 years and develop him. But going back to Chicago, this is the way I would look at it. Is Chicago just missing a quarterback? Absolutely not. They got holes across the board. Their offensive line, defensive, wide receiver, you name it. So I guess if I'm looking at the Chicago Bears, having been inside the doors of an organization, how they operate, I understand it. Okay, you got to believe that there's nobody better than him at number one that can help your team right away. Now, Caleb Williams has a lot of things he's really elite at, and then there's a lot of real big major concerns that you don't know he's going to ever truly develop. Is there other players that you're like, they don't have as many questions, and we need that to help our team. And even in these drafts, you're not just looking at it this year. I mean, you have to have foresight. You have to look at what's available next year and the following year. That's the type of information you really should have in these meetings when you're making those decisions. So, and I just think that here's the biggest mistake every organization makes, every coach, GM makes, is you think you can fix things you can't fix, that you're going to change somebody that you can't change. Like if I told you that you could make somebody who runs a 4.6 run a 4.4, everybody who listens to your show, even you, would be like, there's no way. You just can't do that. You can't change speed. A guy that's 4.6 will never run a 4.4. He might get a little better, but he'll never run a 4.4. Mm-hmm. And everybody would be right on that. But all of a sudden, you can give somebody smartness, you fix stupid. You can give somebody toughness. You can give somebody instincts. You can give somebody accuracy. You can give somebody pocket presence. You can give somebody processing quickly and effectively, anticipation, toughness, all these things that people think you can make. And people go, I can teach that. And I go, that's actually the wrong question. And the wrong response. I know you can teach things. You can teach anything, but that's not what you need to know. You need to know if you can learn it and apply it. That's the real hurdle. Anybody can be taught. So he has a lot of things that he will have to get better at and he'll have to evolve in. And I'm not saying he can't. It's just a big hurdle based on these two things. Processing and accuracy are like, they're almost like woven into one. Like without one, it'll run you out of the league. If you're really not accurate, that's going to run you out of the league. If you're not a really good processor, it's going to run you out of the league. Now, his accuracy is actually elite. His processing is average at best in a clean pocket and a dirty pocket. And the reason I mentioned dirty pocket, that's the environment he's going to. You know, he sat in college, and the predominant stuff is perimeter stuff. And even in a clean pocket where they're having 3 and 4 and sometimes 5 seconds, he still didn't make the right decisions or threw the ball in the right way. Now, that's either just out of how he likes to function. Well, that's a bad way, because if you don't play in structure in the National Football League, you're just going to get exposed. They'll eventually destroy you from that. And he won a Heisman Trophy by being real elusive, which he is very elusive. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you think about when he's elusive, the one thing I don't know if things has really been emphasized enough, which is really disturbing to me, and it'll be disturbing. I don't care who drafts him. Man, he puts that ball on the ground a lot. People strip it from him. He fumbles on it. I mean, way too much in the National Football League. And if you look at his throws that he makes out of structure, there are some incredible throws, and there are some incredibly bad throws and bad decisions. That's why I go back to the structure aspect. So he's going to have to harness what is a strength of his, which is to be elusive and to go make plays. And he's going to have to play in structure, as a majority of his game has to be better from that perspective. And that's not going to be an easy process.
Right. You and I talked, and we were talking off mic even in Vegas, and you were talking about the value of a quarterback in this high in the draft when you don't have one and you got to go find one, but the guy that you're getting is not a top 5 or top 10 pick, so you've got that value there. And the pressure is based on a guy that's a top 5, top 10 pick, even though you know they shouldn't be, but because you're desperate for a quarterback. And then I was reading in Pro Football Talk about the conversation regarding Drake May, saying this is the kind of player that could actually get you fired because he's not that top 5 pick, but because of your desperation. Are teams setting themselves up for natural failure because of that?
Absolutely. I go back to what here's their excuse. This is going to be their excuse. Well, that's all you have this year. Well, you're going to fix your team in a year? I mean, nothing great is built suddenly. No team is built suddenly. It takes draft and draft, good draft picks. So let's look at Drake May, where he is. And Drake May has massive issues you're not going to fix. He's a lumbering athlete. He's slow in the pocket. He has elongated throwing motion. And he is erratic in all aspects, clean pocket, dirty pocket. Short, intermediate, vertical. Now, he will make some throws. There's a good and a bad to all this. He can make some throws. I could put a highlight reel together. You'd be like, oh, my gosh. Never seen anything like it. But if you look at his body of work, I would be scared to death to bring him to the National Football League in the top 3 picks and go, we are not going to be exposed for this. This is not going to catch us at some point. And keep in mind, now, he's a great example. I will tell you this. I have not seen all 300 players that are, I know it's a little less than 300 players are going to get drafted. I'm just about half of it. Okay. So I haven't seen everybody. Of what I have seen, you could give me positions and I'd say, okay, this guy's better than Drake May. And we need this guy at tackle. Okay. At defensive end, at pass rusher, at corner. I could give you every position, somebody who's better than him that would help our team right away. And we need all those players. So why don't you go with the person that's going to help you build a football team versus somebody who's going to set your organization back and get you fired? Because you're not going to fix all the problems that he has. Can you dial in his accuracy a little bit? Sure. But he'll never be consistent. Are you going to make his footwork a little bit? You surely can, but he is not a quick twitch player, so you're only going to be able to get so far with that. You can work your – remember Byron Leftwich?
Yeah.
Byron Leftwich had one flaw. He had elongated motion, and here's what that did. And it was like about a half, say like a 0.5 second, difference than the average NFL quarterback. So what did that do to every defensive coordinator? Let's blitz him more because we get hits on him.
Yeah.
That ran him out of the league. Just that one flaw ran him out of the league. He'd do everything else so well. He could not, that right there, and you couldn't fix it because that has been his motion forever. You couldn't tighten it up even though they tried. It's what he's been doing since he threw the ball. And you're going to spend all your time fixing that. That's just like, but people think you can. And, and if you just create a list of these things we can't fix, we know it. If they have it, we pass them because there's plenty of other players that don't. and we have a better chance with them. And then set your organization back. Whoever gets Drake May, that might be the most interesting organization to find, because that will be the arduous, that'll be an arduous process to offset all of his issues with a team that's not going to be able to protect him, not going to hide him. He will be exposed more for what his flaws are than Caleb Williams.
Real quick before I let you go, and I know we only got a minute or so here, but I wanted to ask you, so when you start to go through this and you start to look at different talents, not just quarterback, but different talents, I remember a conversation I had with Ron Wolf, and he talked about all the intangibles in the combine, and then we started talking, and he said, you know what, I just want football players. Sometimes you just have to take the football players, right?
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a guy, and I don't know if that's where you're going, but I'll give you a football guy. I'll give you a football guy. That this guy may not have been on your radar. You may not have heard him of him. And when I tell you the school he's coming from, everybody's like, "Oh, you can't Duke."
Right.
So Graham Barton. Okay. One thing about this whole process, I have a clean canvas. When I put on tape, I have no idea about the guy. He's a projected center. I'm seeing the list of centers, and first thing I notice, I'm like, "Well, he's playing left tackle. He ain't even playing center." Okay. So well, that's all I can look at. When he starts playing left tackle, I'm like, oh, my gosh. This guy, from feet to hips to hands, is incredibly fundamental. I mean, he's quick. He's dynamic. He's smart. And then I'm going through this whole process, but I'm loving every aspect of this. I can't get enough of this kid. And I'm like, okay, you take that skill set. I can understand. He's probably not long enough in the National Football League. So, and he had played center before. He's played guard, so he's done a whole host of things. And you could tell he could do it all. I'm like, you put him at center. Listen, my first roommate was Mike Webster.
Mm-hmm.
One of my dearest friends in my Pittsburgh career was Damani Dawson. We lived next to each other for like majority of our career in the NFL. Okay, two of the greatest centers in the history of the National Football League. And it's interesting that you have to bring something to the party if you're going to take a guy in the first round as a center. Well, this guy brings something completely different from a skill set. But one thing stood out that I think I've ever seen. Maybe I've seen. I've just forgot about it. But I'm watching, and you should probably go try to find this if you got tape. But they're playing North Carolina State. They're the 17-yard line. They're 17. They run like an inside zone. The running back's number 7. He's playing left tackle. He blocks, I think it's the defensive end, and takes him all the way across the line of scrimmage and takes him to the ground. The back cuts off him. And the way their safeties were playing, he goes untouched for 83-yard touchdown run. 83-yard touchdown run. Now, I'm watching this on coaching tape, so I see all 22. So players get lost as the camera widens out. But at the end zone, there's a group of players all in a circle doing a little dance, blah, blah, blah. So the next – I watched this play 3 times, end zone angle, offense, defense. I'm on the end zone of the offense, and I'm like, wait a minute, 62's down there dancing. I'm like, what? I go, he was on the ground. So anyway, I back it up, and I go, look, and there's 2 guys on the round. They're offensive linemen. He's one of them. He gets up. He runs. He's sprinting to the end zone. Now, keep in mind, the back is untouched. He doesn't even have to make a move. He just runs a straight line for a touchdown. Okay, the one offensive lineman stays there. The other one was standing there. He just stands there. He runs past them. He runs past another 2 offensive linemen. Then he runs past 2 tight ends that stop running, and he ends up in the end zone as one of those 4 players grouped there. And I'm like, okay. All I hear is stop right there. I go, that is the type of player I would want on my team.
Right.
And okay, let's say great man, I would take that guy right there. He's going to help me win a championship a lot quicker. And let's say my need is center too, by the way, you know, I'm not going to take you with that, but okay. That's the thing. In tape, you're looking for football players to your point. Yes. All you're looking for. Okay. That's a football player. That's a football player with passion. Yeah. And that guy can help you win a championship. And mine, I know he will. I can trust him and he'll always be there. And, you know, that's the thing I look for, too, because I believe I came into this league with Chuck Knoll, and that's exactly what Chuck Knoll did. He's like, we're going to find out who's the biggest, strongest, fastest, and jumps the hardest. And then I got 5 weeks to find out who can play football, and that's who I'm keeping.
Merrill, I could talk to you for hours, and I love it. We're up against the clock, but, man, I appreciate it, and thank you so
anytime,
much for the
Bill.
Insight, man. All right, buddy.
Good
Take
luck.
Care, and we'll talk to you soon. There you go. Merrill Hodge, great stuff. More than Bill Michael Show.
Covering Wisconsin sports like a blanket, this is The Bill Michael Show on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Great stuff from Merrill Hodge. former Steeler running back, scout, ESPN analyst, all that kind of good stuff. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We went long in the last segment. We're going to come back. More of the Bill Michaels Show. Two down, two to go. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.